And now we have the next sermon from Mr. Carlson.
Good morning, everyone. Hope everybody has had a fine week, and nice to see everybody here. Last week, we were kind of few in number. It's good to see us back up. Insane world we live in, no doubt, when just addressing people as he or she is actually a questionable behavior, just crazy where we live. Title of the sermon today, I don't always have one readily, but this week worked better for me. Anyway, when the gales of November come early, the gales, G-A-L-E-S, the gales of November come early. We're all familiar, I'm sure, with the America's Great Lakes up around Wisconsin, surrounded by Canada to the north, partly anyway. Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, New York, I think Pennsylvania, maybe there's some others that touch upon the Great Lakes. Incredible, an incredible body of water up there. Lake Superior, five of them, I believe, Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, Lake Erie, and Lake Ontario. The Great Lakes contain roughly, it's incredible, part of the blessings that God has given to the descendants of Abraham. The Great Lakes contain roughly 20% of the entire world's fresh water in the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes are the world's largest fresh water system and really instrumental in the development, the industrial development of the United States of America, the barges and the shipping that took place and still takes place in those lakes. Lake Superior is the largest freshwater lake in the world by area alone. It is so big, Lake Superior is so big that it actually creates its own weather. It's that big of a large body of water. The average depth of that lake, the average depth is 500 feet. At its deepest point, it reaches down to a little over 1,300 feet. And incredibly, that lake has 2,800 miles of shoreline. Let's give you an idea of how gigantic it is. Well, in that lake, we'll jump back and forth here just for the sake of my lack of organization to some degree. But in 1975, I believe it was, there was a freighter ship that went down in Lake Superior. The Edmunds Fitzgerald was the name of that ship. It was a big freighter, I think 700 and, I don't know if freighter is the right word to use or not, but I think it's 729 feet long. And it was loaded with 26,000 tons of iron ore, if I'm not mistaken. And it went down in a great storm that came across that lake. There was a song made about that, the sinking of the Edmunds, or the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, by a Canadian, no doubt, Gordon Lightfoot. But you notice he had to sing it about an American ship. You know? But anyway, he did a good job. We're actually going to listen to that at the end of the sermon here today. But there's many lessons we can learn from that. We'll bounce back and forth on those a little bit as we go through here. But in that area, those people involved in the maritime up and through there, they call it the Witch, W-I-T-C-H, the Witch of November. It means the weather will change. It can get quite severe in November. But the temptation is to, for the people who run the shipping companies and the captains, that we can get one more run in before what they call freeze over and for the gales of November come in. But as we titled it, and as you'll hear that in the lyrics of Mr. Gordon Lightfoot's song, the gales of November sometime come early. And the gales of November, there's a lesson we can learn from that in our own lives. The gales of November, the disturbances that we thought we would avoid or wouldn't directly touch us, sometimes they come upon us unexpectedly. For you see, it can, as we live, oftentimes it can seem as if God does nothing. It can seem that way to us at times, and until God does something. But not just God, you know, there is such things as time and chance. There are such things as time and chance. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 8. We'll start there. There's three different scriptures I want to look at in Ecclesiastes. I find this one interesting. Actually, it came to my mind this past week. Let's go to 8:6. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 6. Because for every matter, there is a time and judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly. I found that just a very interesting statement, brethren. For every matter, there is a time and a judgment. We're more familiar, I would say, offhand, most of us, with Ecclesiastes 3, where, you know, for everything, there's a time and a season. But I'm going to focus on this one. For every matter, there is a time and a judgment. What brought this to my mind here this past week, I'm not saying it's a judgment of God or not. I have no idea. But most of you have heard about that Al-Qaeda leader that got taken out here. Was it a week ago Sunday or 2 weeks ago Sunday? I'm not sure. Ayman al-Zawahiri. The CIA had tracked him to a safe house where they had information. They found him in they knew that he was in what they call a safe house in Kabul, Afghanistan, and in a kind of a leafy area. You know, he wasn't out there with the peons who had strapped explosives on themselves, but he was a leader of Al-Qaeda. He was taken out. Interesting story. These kind of things kind of fascinate me just a little bit. He was taken out by a R-9X Hellfire missile weapon. They call this thing the Flying Ginzu. It's about 5 feet long. It's fired from a drone. It's fired from a drone, about 5 feet long. And it has been designed to, it doesn't explode. It doesn't explode. It's just kinetic energy. It's about 5 feet long, about 7 inches round, like that. And just before it reaches its target, these four blades come out. That's the title, the Flying Ginzu. So Mr. Awazari was diced and sliced right there on his balcony, right there. And whether or not that was a judgment of God, I have no idea. I find it quite interesting. It reminded me of Nebuchadnezzar. I can see Al-Wazari out on he was on his balcony. They had picked up a pattern. The CIA had picked up on this pattern. He had this pattern of being out on the balcony at a certain time each day. And they picked up on that and they followed this. So he was out on his balcony. You know, nowadays we have to do everything so cut and clean. If they would have killed his family, you know, there would have been hell would have been raised all over the world about it. It's a different story. I don't want to get off there, but that's not really how God operates. You just go back and think of Jody mentioned last week, and Achan, was it Achan? When God took them out, families went down. But anyway, they wanted this clean. America has to do everything clean. So anyway, he's out on his balcony. You can just hear him out there. Is this not Kabul who I rule over? And no explosion, but sliced and diced. This Hellfire Flying Ginzu, you won't hear it or see it. Amazingly, it travels at 1,000 miles an hour at sea level. That is faster than the speed of sound, as one gentleman was talking about. If you were to see it, which you wouldn't, if you saw it 1 mile away, you got 4 seconds to avoid it. But you're not going to see it anyway. Anyway, interesting story. And that just came to my mind as I'm reading this verse here. Because for every matter, there is a time and a judgment. Sometimes it can just seem like things are what changes. Nothing changes. Well, for everything, for every matter, I should say, that's how it's worded here, there is a time and a judgment. Which of these things God's hand comes into? I have no idea. None of us can speak with any authority on that whatsoever. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10, across the page, at least in my Bible, Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. In verse 11, we continue. I returned and I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill. But time and chance happen to them all. We all live, I'll put it this way, Andrew was referring to this, so he didn't use this term, but we all live on this playing field of life, right? Time and chance happens. God's people are separated and protected, but we live in a world that's filled with time and chance. For man, verse 12, man does not know his time, like fish in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. That's the world in which we live. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 8. He who digs a pit will fall into it. I've made a little note in my margin here in my Bible for these next, for verse 8 and 9. I wrote to myself here that there is an inherent risk in activity, just an inherent risk in being active. But without activity, there is no profit. So verse 8 again, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. You can be splitting wood for your fireplace, and peace can fly up and hit you in the head, right? It's just the inherent risk of activity. And there is inherent risk of not just our own activity, but the fact that the gales of November do come early. The gales of November come early. Isaiah puts it this way in Isaiah chapter 30. He speaks of a bulge in a high wall. In fact, I should turn there. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 8. Isaiah 30 and verse 8. Bear with me for a moment. Chapter 30 and verse 8. Now go write it before them on a tablet. God is instructing Isaiah. And note it on a scroll, that it may be for a time to come, forever and ever, that this is a rebellious people, they're lying children. Children will not hear the law of the Lord, who say to the seer, do not see, and to the prophets, do not prophesy to us right things. Speak to us smooth things, prophesy deceits. Get out of the way, turn aside from the path, cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before. So in other words, they're saying, we don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear anything from God. Therefore, God says, and verse 12, therefore, thus says the Holy One of Israel, because you despise the word and trust in oppression and perversity and rely on them, therefore this iniquity shall be to you like a breach ready to fall, like a bulge in a high wall. And often it comes that way. There's records and you can read accounts of great dams that have failed. There was one down in Southern California many decades ago. I can't remember the name of it. But it had a slight bulge, and it would say, but everything is fine. But then just all of a sudden, the bulge gives way, and there's a deluge, and there's no getting away from it. On the Great Lakes there, Lake Superior and those lakes, oftentimes it'll start out a sunny day. But that sunny day masks that there is a gale force blizzard that is actually heading in that direction. The Edmund Fitzgerald, that ship, got caught in that. By the way, that Edmund Fitzgerald, the name comes from, it was that ship was owned by the, I think it was called the Northwestern Life Insurance Company. And the president of that life insurance company was Edmund Fitzgerald. So thus the name of Edmund, the ship got its name from that. But there's always another ship's captain, as a ship's master, who thinks he can outrun a building storm that is out there, but he thinks he has time to make that one last run and get this another load and, you know, make another delivery. And he can get one last run in at the last minute before what they call back in those parts, the freeze up, when they no longer can operate on the Great Lakes. There is in the world that we live in right now, and there is a lot of disruption, but we have become accustomed to upheaval and disruption, right? There's many things that you might see come on the news, which really maybe 15 years ago, if you would have heard that headline, you would have thought to yourself, I'm going to sit down. What's that about? But nowadays it can be mass carnage. And I don't always take the time to stop and listen to it because it's just so common every day. And we get used to that stuff. But when we lose sight of the fact, the world has not always been that way. World has not always been on the scale that it is now. Upheaval and disruption is not a signal for me or for you or for anybody to sit on my hands and be frightened of everything. Upheaval and disruption, it requires a steady hand. If we use our shipping analogy here, it requires a steady hand on the wheel to continue steering that great vessel safely. We are to, in 1 Peter 1:13 says, very similar to what Andrew was quoting in Job 40. In 1 Peter 1:13, it says, gird up the loins of your mind. gird up the loins of your mind, gather up the folds of your garment, be composed, be composed. Luke 17, let's go to the New Testament, Luke 17, because this is kind of swings back a little bit more to the actually more the focus that I have in my mind. As the ship, as the Edmund Fitzgerald set out on this journey, but it turned out to be a very perilous journey. And it took down the ship and all the crew members that were upon it. In fact, not a trace of them was ever found. The ship was located, but not a body was ever found from everything that I've been able to read about it. But Luke 17, 26, let's turn there. We're all familiar with this. Verse 26, speaking of the Christ here, speaking of the time prior to his return to this earth. And as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. I put it this way, it was business as usual. It was business as usual. They had observed this man out there working and his family working on that ark for better than a century, had they not? I think it wasn't 120 years or something like that. That was just a man building this great ship. He's crazy and his whole family must be crazy too. Likewise, as was also in the days of Lot, they ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, and they built. But on the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Everything was okay, as we say, everything was okay until it no longer was okay. And that's the temptation in the world that we live. It can be somebody who knows the truth, but has never followed through on the truth. It could be somebody who knows the truth, has been a faithful member of the Church of God for decades even, but hasn't brought about the changes that he or she knows they should make in their life, whatever that might be. That's between you and God, as mine would be between myself and God. And we just accept it. We become accustomed to it. And but then one day, the gales of November come early and we get caught. The person who never followed through on the truth at all gets caught. And the person who followed through on the truth but wasn't diligent in it, whatever area of their life that might be, the same thing. We're caught in a blizzard. The normalization of upheaval, which we experience, and the normalization of those masters of those ships on Lake Superior, they're used to it. They're used to these conditions, so they think, well, it's okay. We've been through this before. Well, the normalization of upheaval can act as a sedative. It can have a sleep-inducing effect. By sleep-inducing, I mean, we don't take this situation as serious as we should. Peter speaks of that. Second Peter chapter 3, verse 3 says, knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. In other words, the view that, yeah, the world's always, there's always been wars, there's always been upheaval, and there has been. But on the magnitude and scale which we see them now, and the potential of what can be wiped out in a conflict, we're living in a different world that way. But we become accustomed to this stuff. We're living in a period now when people believe that the values and institutions that have stabilized culture and societies, they believe that those values and institutions no longer even have any relevance in life at all. That you can live together without marriage, that you can, whatever it might be, that you can have perversion widespread and that there's no consequence. And that's part of the world we live in now. But then one day the gales move in, the gales of November come early. They call it, I think I mentioned this earlier, it's become known as the Witch of November. It's this change of weather that comes in with a great, incredible fierceness. More ships have been lost on the Great Lakes in November than in any other month of the year, because that's when that weather changes. The temptation to make that last minute run before the conditions go bad and things freeze up. And it starts out oftentimes as a sunny day, and that sunny day masks that there is a gale force blizzard that is forming not all that far away. The end of the season hazards, there is always another ship's master, as I take from one article I read, who thinks he can outrun a building storm. Luke 12:54, Christ says to the, I believe he's speaking to the Pharisees, says, you're able to discern the face of the sky, but you can't discern what's going on around you. Within the culture, with the parable of the fig tree. He's in Luke 21. Let's go to Luke 21. Luke 21 and verse 29. And he spoke to them a parable and said, look at the fig tree and all the trees for that matter. When they are already budding, you see and know for yourselves that summer is now near. So you likewise, when you see these things happening, know that the kingdom of God is near. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away until all things are fulfilled. Heaven and earth may pass away, but my words, they will by no means pass away. So we're able, Christ is saying, you can go to a fig tree and the bud is tender. You know what season it is. He's saying you can look about and see these conditions and know that the return of Christ is imminent. No, nobody sets it. We cannot set a time. But we know it's imminent if we will open our eyes and look. But there is that temptation to say, well, I want to get this done before I get serious about it. Or yes, I have a problem, but I'll take care of it. And then something happens, you know, as we read in Ecclesiastes 8:6, for everything there, for every matter, keep saying thing, I want to say matter because that's the word we find in King James anyway, for every matter, there is a time and a judgment. And especially with people of God, you know, you are known to God, I'm known to God, and he's very patient with us, but there is a time when things change. Regarding these great storms that hit upon the Great Lakes, there was a great storm in November. Again, most of them come in November. Great storm in November of 1913. This storm lasted 4 days. In blizzard conditions, absolute blizzard conditions, which we here in the Central Valley of California have great difficulty relating to. There was no let up. And on this one ship called the Waldo, 26 men and 2 women who were aboard this ship tied themselves to the ship's railings. So bad it was. There was one in that same storm, a freighter called with the name Wexford was caught in the storm, it had 18 men. 96,000 bushels of wheat. These are massive, massive vessels. People along the shore could hear the ship's frantic whistle call in the middle of this huge blizzard. And they could hear that frantic whistle of that ship as it went by. But no one could save its crew because they had got caught in those gales of November. On Armistice Day, November 11, 1940, there was another huge storm that came through there. This, according to meteorologists and sailors, was at least as vicious as the 1913 storm. This storm claimed 5 vessels, 66 lives. After a warm morning, this is how it started out on that day when these ships were taken on November 11, 1940. After a warm morning, the winds struck, carrying rain, which changed to snow as the temperature plummeted. The winds soon reached hurricane strength. By the time the storm reached Lake Michigan, it had already done most of its killing. 110 duck hunters, not people out on ship, 110 duck hunters who had gone into the woods of Minnesota and Wisconsin in an abnormally warm holiday weather froze to death. The weather was fine. It was fine when they went out. They had left home in fall jackets and rubber boots for protection against that night's sub-zero temperatures and the howling winds. Snow drifts that grew over 20 feet stopped them from finding suitable shelter, and they lost their lives. The Minnesota State Climatology Office rated that storm as the greatest weather event short only of the Great Dust Bowl. So huge and bad was that. Well, the Edmund Fitzgerald was the last and the most famous ship to succumb to the Witch of November. When Edmund Fitzgerald was launched in 1958, she was 729 feet, the largest ship on the Great Lakes. On the afternoon of Sunday, November 9, 1975, Fitzgerald left the Burlingham Northern Railroad dock in Superior, Wisconsin, at the extreme southwestern end of Lake Superior. She was going to make her way following the south end of the shore to her destiny, which I think was in Cleveland. She was loaded with over 26,000 tons of iron ore pellets headed for a steel mill a few miles from where she was actually built. The captain of the Edmund Fitzgerald at this time was Ernie McSnorty, and he and the members of his crew, they knew that a gale was moving towards Lake Superior, but the weather forecast, National Weather System Service, said that it would be south of them, so there was going to be no problem. They could complete this journey. So the National Weather Service issued a gale warning for all the Great Lakes that Sunday night, though. It changed that pattern of the weather changed. By then, Edmund Fitzgerald was steaming up the Minnesota shore of Lake Superior in the company of another ship, the Arthur M. Anderson, another ore freighter. They were both moving along. I believe Edmund Fitzgerald was a little in front of Anderson. I'm not sure. Well, at about 2 a.m., remember when they left, conditions were fine, but it was November. It was November, but they would expect these gales and stuff later in November. But as we titled it, when the gales of November come early, and the gales of November can come early in our lives, and the gales of November can come early in an entire nation's life as well. Well, about 2 a.m., McSnorley and Jess Cooper, the captain of Anderson, decided the storm was dangerous, and they moved their ships to the sheltered northern route. So instead of hugging down around Wisconsin, Minnesota, they moved up closer to the Canadian end, that there would be more shelter and they'd have more protection from this blizzard that was coming in them. They would seek shelter up in the northern route of Superior's north shore, past the Ontario towns of Thunder Bay and Schreiber, I think was the other one. Well, early Monday, a camper on the southern coast of the Slate Islands off Terrace Bay saw Fitzgerald and Anderson pass by as the winds picked up and the waves began to build. So things are just beginning to happen. Well, throughout the trip, Fitzgerald was the faster of the two ships, steadily pulled in front of Anderson. And at this point, they have 40-mile-an-hour winds. Off Michigan Island, Fitzgerald signaled the first signs of trouble. The waves were still less than 13 feet at this point, and then the winds were nearly calm. But McSnorley reported to Cooper that his ship was rolling some. It was being affected by the adverse weather. An hour south of a particular island there, McSnorley asked Anderson, captain, to help navigate because Fitzgerald's radar wasn't working. Things were beginning to decline here. Without radar, the crew had no way of determining their position. The ships may have drifted toward the Canadian shore and smacked its bottom on a shoal. The wind was now approaching 45 miles an hour. McSnorley radioed Anderson to say Fitzgerald was listing, which is not what you want to hear regarding the ship. By then, the waves were building quickly, high enough to roll over the decks of both ships. We're underneath great stress at this time. Cooper, the captain of the Anderson, said the waves were 3 to 4 meters high, which I think is 13, 14, 15 feet high, if I'm not mistaken. The force of the pounding water crumpled several of Anderson's lifeboats. The two freighters were steering directly for the center of a low pressure. Again, when they left port, there was time to make this last run. They had time to make this last run. At 6 p.m., half an hour after nightfall, the waves had risen to nearly 30 feet. You can imagine that on a ship with 30 feet winds. Again, this Lake Superior is so large, it just creates its own weather there. An hour later, Anderson called Fitzgerald with some navigational information. Then 10 minutes later, when asked how Fitzgerald was doing, McSnortley, the captain of Fitzgerald, said, "We are holding our own. We are holding our own." Cooper noticed that the radar showed Fitzgerald was 15 kilometers away, just approaching Whitefish Point. An Anderson bridge officer glanced at the radar again, and Fitzgerald was gone. It disappeared. That was the last contact they had. The lack of a distress signal and the fact that bodies were never found strongly suggests that Fitzgerald went to the bottom before any crew members had a chance to move from their stations. Again, the gales of November come early. If they were on dirty or their berths, they had no time to take any action at all. Actually, where the Fitzgerald went down, again, Fitzgerald's 729 feet long, it was actually longer than the lake was deep at that point. But sunk, but it went down, went into the bottom, and then the ship broke in two. And the bottom, the back part, the bow, I think the bow was the back, if I'm not mistaken, it broke off and landed upside down underneath it. No crew members were ever found. The bow of the boat plunged first into the water. Within seconds, it was far enough down the water that water pressure smashed every window, forcing water into the forward cabins and drowning or crushing the men inside. Fitzgerald was actually longer than the lake was deep at this point. Her bow, with the weight of the fully loaded ship behind her, hit the bottom within a few seconds, in just a matter of seconds. As the Fitzgerald's bow dug into the bottom, her stern rose above the waves. The ship torn half about midway along her deck, and part of her hull disintegrated into a flutter of crumpled, torn steel plates and quickly plunged to the lake bottom. The stern of the Fitzgerald rolled as it fell, landing on the bottom, upside down. They say that regarding the Witch of November, the seamen who worked that area, say that complacency is the bait that serves the Witch of November. Complacency. What is complacency? Well, or let me back up just a second. As they say, complacency is the bait that serves the Witch of November. In other words, the attitude, we've seen this before. We've seen this before. It's not my first rodeo. I've seen storms before. I think I can make this run. I think we can make this run. Complacency, it carries with it, perhaps, a connotation of laziness, a connotation of apathy. You can carry that. It's an unawareness of the actual dangers that are out there, right? An unawareness of the actual dangers or the deficiencies that we have within ourselves, if we're going to take this in a personal way, this complacency and an unawareness of the actual dangers we face, because I'll go back in my mind anyway, I'm going to turn there, Ecclesiastes 8:6, for every matter, there is a time and a judgment. And surely that is true among the people of God. God is very patient, but for every matter, there is a time and a judgment. A complacency, unawareness of the actual dangers or the deficiencies that we ourselves might have, an uncritical acceptance of where one is. Just uncritical, an acceptance of the condition I have allowed myself to get into mentally, emotionally, whatever that case may be. Well, the roaring, one gentleman said, of these storms that they get caught in, and that particular one that took down the Fitzgerald said, the roaring waves looked like great black walls that rolled out of the blizzard and just washed over the ship. But see, by that time, it's too late. By that time, it's too late. Luke 14, let's go to Luke, or at least I'm there. Let's go back to Luke 14. I'm not going to say a quirk of human nature. It's a steady component of human nature. Luke 14, 15. Now, when one of those who sat at the table with him heard these things, he said to him, blessed is he who shall eat bread in the kingdom of God. Then he said to him, Christ speaking, then he said to him, referencing Christ here, a certain man gave a great supper and he invited many. And he sent his servant at supper time to say to those who were invited, come, for all things are now ready. But they all, with one accord, began to make excuses. They made light of it. I think in Matthew, the account of Matthew with this, he uses this term. They made a light of it and just didn't take it serious. Didn't take, like maybe the captain of a ship didn't take as serious as he should the weather forecast. He didn't take it as serious as he should. Verse 18, Luke 14, but they all with one accord, well, they began to make excuses, to make light of it. The first said to him, I have bought a piece of ground. I must go and see it. I ask that you have me excused. Another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I am going to test them. I ask that you have me excused. Still another said, I've married a wife, therefore I cannot come. All those who were invited, they made light of it. They went about their ways, one to his farm, another to his business, another back home to his wife. Now, interesting thing about all those examples that Jesus uses there, every one of those examples are legitimate activities, aren't they? Every one of those activities are legitimate. I bought a piece of ground. Nothing wrong with that. Man is active. He's doing something. He's trying to do something. I bought a piece of ground. In other words, I bought 5 yoke of oxen. I ask that you have me excused. It's legitimate. Another one says, I've married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. All of those are legitimate endeavors, every single one of them. Problem is, they are poorly prioritized. They're poorly prioritized in their lives. They set aside the invitation, and obviously, brethren, we know exactly what Christ's point is here. It has to do with hearing the call of God and responding in a positive manner to it. But all of those things are legitimate, but they were poorly prioritized. That the first, you know, first things first. First thing is your relationship with God. I believe, you know, in this case, we go back to our analogy of the ship. What we say, I've bought a piece of ground, I've got 5 yoke of oxen, whatever terminology you want to use in the world that we live in at this time. What we're saying is, I believe I have enough time. I believe there's plenty of time. I'll get this situation cleaned up eventually. But then all of a sudden, the gales in November come early, and you have these black walls of water washing over you. You tie yourself to the railing of a ship and pray. And the people on shore hear your cries, but there's nothing that anybody can do. I believe there's enough time. We can make one more run. One more run, the last minute run before freeze up. Because after all, it's a sunny day. It's a sunny day. There's no gale today. The 110 people went out, what was it, November 11, 1940? The duck hunters went out. It was a good day to go hunting. Yeah, grab a little jacket just in case. And they lost their lives. And we get caught when the gales of November come early. So it was a lesson for each and every one of us in this, brethren, if we will consider it, take it to heart, prioritize things properly in our life, and remember that to everything, to every matter, I keep saying thing, to every matter, there is a time and a judgment. And everything that happens around us is not that God has brought about a judgment. I cannot say when God does and when he doesn't. But it does say for every matter, there's a time and a judgment. So we want to keep these things in our mind. Sometimes, brethren, if you have many of the Psalms that we read of, they were sung. And they helps get things in your mind. So I'm going to sit down here in just a minute. Mr. Bremer is going to play that song that Gordon Lightfoot made about this shipping disaster. Because sometimes if you put music to it or a song to it, it'll put it in your mind in a way that'll help pull it, a reserve that you can pull back upon. And you can say, yeah, I remember. You know, sometimes the gales of November, they do come early. And if everything works the way Mr. Bremer told me it would, we'll hear that, and it'll also show the lyrics on the screen, so you'll be able to see that. And hopefully it'll help plant it in each one of our minds, the fact that there's things we cannot anticipate and always know God's time frame, but we can know that for every matter, there is a time and a judgment, and sometimes, brethren, oftentimes, the gales of November do come early. So Mr. Bremer will play that now.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down at the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling? The wind and the wires made a tattletale sound, and the wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late and the breakfast had to wait when the gales of November came slashing. When afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind. When supper time came, the old cook came on deck saying, "Fellas, it's too rough to feed you." At 7 p.m. a main hatchway gave in. He said, "Fellas, it's been good to know you." The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. And later that night when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? The searchers all say they'd have made Whitefish Bay if they'd put 15 more miles behind her. They might have split up or they might have capsized. They may have broke deep and took water. And all that remains is the faces and the names of the wives and the sons and the daughters. Lake Huron rolls, Superior sings in the rooms of her ice water mansion. Old Michigan steams like a young man's dreams. The islands and bays are for sportsmen. And farther below, Lake Ontario takes in what Lake Erie can send her. The iron boats go, as the mariners all know, with the gales of November remembered. Musty old hall in Detroit, they prayed in the Maritime Sailors' Cathedral. The church bell chimed till it rang 29 times for each man on the Edmund Fitzgerald. And the legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Superior, they said, never gives up for dead when the gales of November come early.